It's the bass move.
Welcome you to It's Debatable. You are listening to Campus FM. The frequency is 103.7. On our last show today, we shall be discussing unemployment, poverty and the concept of social exclusion, both in Malta and also within the international scenario. Here in the studio, I have three special guests. I have Dr. Isabel Calleja-Gonesio, who is the head of the International Relations Department. I welcome you to It's Debatable, Dr. Calleja.
Thank you, Darren. I'm happy to be here.
And thank you for accepting our invitation and for participating in this debate. And also, I have two international relations students. I have Mikael Jean Pisani and Elizabeth Malia, who are second year international relations students. I welcome you to It's Debatable.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, when we mention the issue of poverty, we cannot not refer to the World Summit on Social Development and Copenhagen of 1995, which had defined extreme poverty as a condition characterized by severe deprivation of basic human needs, including food, safe drinking water, sanitation facilities, health, shelter, education, and information. This, of course, can contrast with social exclusion, which is a process whereby certain individuals are pushed to the edge of society and prevented from participating fully in society. Of course, these are the aspects we shall be touching upon in our discussion today with my three guests. So first, I would like to start with our academic contributor for today, Dr. Isabel Calleja. Dr. Calleja, when we talk about poverty, we cannot... First, we have to start from a continental aspect, I guess, and we have to keep in mind the unemployment and poverty on a continental level of analysis.
Well, yes, Darren. I mean, we have to obviously distinguish between poverty in Europe and poverty globally, because obviously it differs. I mean, obviously, unemployment globally has become an increasing problem, and in certain countries, it is the most determining social factor. I mean, if we look like somewhere like Senegal, where unemployment is 48%, or Namibia, where it is 51%, the most staggering example is Zimbabwe, which is 95%. I mean, then you can well imagine that the most determining factor there is unemployment. In Europe, in the recent recession, unemployment has also become a growing problem. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in the euro area as a whole, it's around 10%. It's highest in Spain at 21%, and in Ireland, it currently stands at 15%. And of course, we also have to take into consideration that, I mean, these statistics do not cover a part of the unemployment, because it doesn't cover registered students, it doesn't cover people in temporary employment or in part-time jobs. Who tend to be more vulnerable. So, in effect, the figures would be higher. This, of course, is a huge problem, because it means that today we are talking about a new divide between those who have jobs and those who don't. And in effect, there are certain analysts today who speak about the growth of a two-thirds, one-third society, i.e. those who live comfortably, and those, and there are a large group who are increasingly struggling to survive. And, I mean, the latter often includes those groups in society which are unfortunately the most vulnerable, although it's not just the case, because, I mean, you can even get middle-class individuals sometimes who, you know, are struggling to survive due to a lack of unemployment. But, obviously, the most vulnerable groups are most hard hit. The old, the young, the just out of school, single mothers, children. You know, these groups, if they are not assisted, fall under the poverty line and the vicious circle is initiated. It, in effect, means that there are groups in the state that cannot access resources, and the level of inequality between citizens grows to such a dire proportion that we get a scenario where a section of the population become excluded from many areas necessary for life, such as education, the workplace, healthcare, or in terms of access to goods and services of general interest.
Dr. Kalea, in my introduction, I mentioned that the World Summit on Social Development in Copenhagen of 1995 managed to define absolute poverty, and some analysts within the international relations milieu consider this to be a milestone because it expresses how state actors reaffirmed their commitment towards tackling poverty as an issue within the context of international relations. Now, of course, the concept of poverty per se does not include absolute poverty alone, but increasingly we are talking about relative poverty. So how do the concepts differ from each other?
Yes, Darren. Well, I mean, the thing is, it also depends to some extent on geography. I mean, in Europe, I'm not saying that there aren't pockets where mm-hmm. absolute poverty exists, but we are largely talking about the case of relative poverty. And it was first agreed by the European Council in 1975 that relative poverty is defined as people who are said to be living in poverty if their income and resources are so inadequate as to preclude them from having a standard of living considered acceptable in the society in which they live. Because of their poverty, they may experience, therefore, multiple disadvantages through unemployment, low income, poor housing, inadequate health care, and barriers of lifelong learning, culture, sport, etc. In other words, every country sets mm-hmm. a different barrier to what it considers to be
relative.
A poverty line, you know, that is relative poverty.
Which, of course, brings us to the local scenario about Malta. Of course, we have a quite heightening amount of poverty. Even the church has acknowledged that poverty is relatively high in Malta, and we also speak of relative poverty in our local scenario. So how severe is the situation in our state?
Well, I mean, this is an important factor to bring forward because, unfortunately, in Malta, very often the average, you know, individual does not focus on the concept of there actually being, you know, high levels of poverty on the island, you know, especially certain quarters of the island. Now, just a quote from a report that was released lately by Angela Abela and Father Charles Tabone, who were discussing poverty in Malta. Their focus primarily was on how this poverty impacts on the structures of our society, particularly on children. Their report stated that, in fact, 21% of children in Malta, 2% higher than in the EU, live in relative poverty. And, of course, this is extremely important for the social cohesion of our society because children are the most vulnerable.
Exactly.
When they are found in these situations, you know.
Particularly because they're not involved in the workforce. So they cannot provide a living for...
Definitely. I mean, they have very little control over what is happening to them. But, of course, they are... What you can say is that they are actually witnessing... They are part of the side effects of, you know, a poverty-ridden family. I mean, children brought up in poor circumstances do not do well at school, do not enjoy a good quality of life, do not take part in social life, such as school outings, you know. And, unfortunately, it has been shown that... children from these backgrounds, you know, tend to perpetrate then, you know, a certain type of social behavior. In other words, we tend then, if these children, for instance, have lived in a construct where access to resources has been very hard, and I mean they have seen their parents unemployed, then unfortunately often they replicate this behavior further down the line, and we tend to get generational poverty and unemployment.
Which of course leads to social exclusion. Because once you cannot participate in social activities because of your lack of resources, you are socially excluded from mainstream society.
Definitely. Well, often what happens is that, of course, people who are suffering from poverty often want to try and keep this hidden, you know, because they don't want other people to know what they're going through, you know, and they don't want other people to realize how hard it is for them to make ends meet. And, of course, for them, they feel that it is very, very tiring to even get on with the most basic aspects of life, you know. So many things end up by being denied to them, you know, that they get very discouraged, you know, and therefore they tend to increasingly withdraw from many aspects of society because they feel that they can't cope, you know, with many of these aspects.
Well, Dr. Kalea, I thank you very much for your academic introduction and the insight which you gave us on the local situation of poverty and social exclusion in Malta. Remember that you can join in our conversation with your questions and comments by sending an info@mirsa.org.mt or as by logging on our online forum on mirsa.org.mt. The discussion continues with my other two guests for today, Mikael Pisani and Elizabeth Malia, right after this commercial break. I invite you to stay tuned to Campus FM and keep listening to It's Debatable. I welcome you back to It's Debatable. You are listening to Campus FM. The frequency is 102.7 and I am Darren Katkuti, your host for today's show. Mick, before with Dr. Kalea, I was discussing the three concepts of relative poverty, absolute poverty and social exclusion, which basically the three together concoct the concept of poverty. But what are your initial thoughts on the subject which we are discussing today?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say is that I think, and you guys would probably agree with me, that we live mm-hmm. in a paradox. You know, we're at the pinnacle of human development. Material and technological achievements are extremely high, but we find ourselves extremely anxiety-ridden, you know, prone to depression, worried about how others mm-hmm. see us, unsure of our friendships, driven to consume, you know, and we have little community life in general. You know, we seek comfort in overeating, overspending, you know, we drink alcohol excessively.
Lifestyle has become a very important concept in our lives.
Well, yes, but negative, very, very, very negative ways.
It's become too materialistic, you could say.
Exactly, that's mm-hmm. that's the whole point. But the question I ask then is, how is that we have created so much material and emotional suffering despite all these levels of wealth and comfort that, you know, we've never seen previously in human history? You know, we talk of our lives as if we are in a constant battle for psychological survival, especially me at the moment. You know, I keep thinking that's the end of the world with all the exams I have to study for and all mm-hmm. the assignments I have to finish, you know. You know, so we're struggling against all this stress and emotional exhaustion. But the truth is that we live, the luxury we live in is so great that it's actually threatening the planet. You know, now mm-hmm. we have environmental problems and et cetera. Unfortunately, however, I don't think mainstream politics seems to tap into these issues very well.
Do you think they are totally ignored?
Yes, not totally,
they
somewhat.
Get sidetracked.
Exactly, mm-hmm. yeah. I think so. And so what I see is that voters, you know, as voters, we have lost sight of, you know, the collective belief that society can be different or could be different. Instead of a better society, the only thing that many of us strive for is to better our own positions as individuals and not as society in general. You know, today we just think about ourselves. When I think one of the solutions is to think collectively, mm-hmm. you know. But this was
Liz. Any thoughts on this issue here, which Mick is mentioning? That sort of, as an international society, we have to think collectively rather than individually.
No, it's interesting. I like this point vis-a-vis we should cooperate more with each other. Mm-hmm. We need strong civil society.
Exactly.
Need a sense of community. That definitely contributes to sort of healthier society in the long run. If you're too individualistic, you know, you're on your own, you're exposed, it makes it a lot harder when things go wrong.
Yeah. It's all about being equal. It's all about equality.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was reading this book by Richard Wilkinson about the solution to poverty. It's called The Spirit Level. Anyway, and in this book, he studied the development of certain countries, and in his studies he shows that the United States of America, which is one of the most developed mm-hmm. countries, states in the world, is actually the country with most inequality. You know, and maybe you begin to wonder, oh, you know, this is the reason for a lot of social unrest. This mm-hmm. is why people tend to eat
no,
a lot of junk food,
definitely.
You know, because it's cheaper. You know, you don't care about your health. You, so we we resort to the these lower qualities, basically.
Lower quality of life.
Exactly.
What I would like to touch upon is the local issue, poverty in Malta. I was talking with Dr. Kalea about this, and what interests me is, do you think that sort of NGOs in Malta and civil society express more commitment towards tackling poverty than governmental institutions in Malta?
I think it depends. It depends which side we're discussing it from. I mean, because NGOs seem to be a bit more active, in the sense they have a hands-on approach. For example, I don't know, in my mind, I have a list of a list of these organizations which help the irregular immigrants on the island, and also there's the YMCA. You know, these have a hands-on approach. But then again, I'm sure the government, I mean, the state itself, will have social security here, which is pretty good, I believe.
It's good, but it tends to get misused, like any system can be. Yeah. Like, you will have people, this tends to be among poorer people or of a lesser education. A lot of women of this sort of range would tend to get pregnant when they're young in order to benefit from having this child. That's a sort of short-term plan to get cash.
Of course, this problem is not only present in Malta, but also
this is
in
a
other
phenomenon
European countries.
Not restricted to Malta,
especially, it's widely felt in Malta because, of course, we're a small territory where people know each other.
You
so
notice it more.
It's more.
And that also has a kind of domino effect, because the moment, for example, a teenage girl gets pregnant, she drops out of school, so they already have a lower level of education.
Exactly.
This will make it difficult for her to reintegrate back into society,
which leads to social exclusion.
Exactly, and it will be difficult for this person to climb the social ladder, which apparently today in the world we live in has become very important to look good in front of others.
And you also have to consider that the child of such a person would also have a hard time getting involved, because if someone's parents are poor or not that well educated, they may not instill in you the values to want to improve yourself or to get to do well in school, so you could end up as well dropping out of school, not being employed, remaining poor,
making the
same mistakes. There's
a lack of access of resources as
well. Yes, and also such a child would probably be slightly marginalised as well, less integrated.
So this brings me to my next observation. Do we need a reform in our social security system? Do you think it is important that sort of the governmental institutions and program review how they are distributing social benefits to the people and construct better qualification criteria?
A review, because you mentioned the word review, a review is always beneficial, I think, to see what's happening.
Of course, this should be done on a regular basis, ideally.
Exactly. If it should be changed, well, I don't know, because on paper it looks like a very good system.
And then the practicality somehow gets twisted a bit.
Yeah.
You still get people who would bypass the system
find a loophole.
And find a loophole, yes. Do you think that cleavages are relative to poverty? I mean, in Malta we tend to talk a lot about the north-south cleavage, that sort of a lot of poverty concentrates in the Cotonera area, such as Cospicua, Senglia, and Vittoriosa. Do you think that this is relevant to poverty, Liz?
Well, actually things have been changing recently, like in Birgu at least. They've had major development projects. They've built the casino. There are hotels being constructed. The Birgu waterfront is very, very stylish now.
The area has been regenerated.
The area has been regenerated. Yes, thank you. That's exactly what I meant. So I would not say it's as poor as it was, say, 20 years ago. I think it's a big misconception when people say the South is poor. The South, it's true. The resources aren't distributed that well. I know of some roads in Birgu. They have been dug up and left for 3 years without being tarmacked. So something is going wrong there, but I think the standard has increased a lot.
The role of local councils perhaps in the south has helped society to acquire better knowledge and resources and training, perhaps. Do you think that this is
training? Could be. I think it could be.
We also have to see that this north-south cleavage, it's all because of history. I mean, when the British were here, they concentrated all their efforts on developing the north. You know, we have Pembroke, which was a village created by them, for them. Where the south during this time was a bit, you know, neglected. So most of the developments and advances when it comes to architecture and technologies were more concentrated into the northern part of the island. So
especially after the World War II, when a lot of the middle classes moved off.
Exactly.
We had the human resources over there. We had the human resources. You know,
and as soon as the human resources moved out, and the
not to mention the rebuilding of the Cotton Era is quite a shoddy job.
Okay, my next question is for both of you. Why is education important in order to present more opportunities to the working class?
Okay, in this day and age, most jobs you do need some form of qualifications. If you have the basic education, you will, even leaving school with merely O levels, you will at least have the basics necessary to get some form of a job. If you go higher, obviously your options broaden. You can get more jobs. If you go into university, you tend to have access to the higher paying jobs. So really education is, I think it would be the fundament of decreasing poverty.
It is the key to
employment.
Move forward.
Yeah, exactly. It's the key. It's the key to economics, to your economical sustainability, you know?
Of course, I mean, when we mention poverty, we cannot exclude immigration out of the equation, and sort of immigrants tend to suffer mostly from social exclusion, especially in Malta, and of course from, because they do not have access to most of the, they do not participate in the distribution of resources.
And what's interesting is that there actually haven't been very many moves to try and integrate them. And if there have been, they haven't been governmental. Most of them seem to have been by charities. Like, I remember seeing one that you could go down to Marsa and there would be a night of music or there'd be a dinner. But this is all by charities and NGOs. This is not really a government move.
What do you think, Mick, about
this?
We
have to keep in mind that here we're talking about irregular immigrants,
irregular migrants. In our local situation.
Okay. Because when we're talking about other legal immigrants, I mean, they contribute a lot to our economy.
So do you think that it's worrying, the fact that in our local situation, irregular migrants are contributing to the economy, but on an informal basis through a black market, not through an official market, so they cannot contribute via taxes and so on. They are not helping the social security system.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm sure there are cases of this. I mean, I can't tell you.
And I doubt it's restricted to Malta, this black market economy.
Yes, it's on a European scale as well. We also have to take into consideration other problems which they have, such as mental problems. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I speak from what my mother has told me. She's English, and during her training, she worked in a mental institution. Now, she mentioned this program in the 80s. It was called Care in the Community. The idea is that these institutionalized people would be sent to live in the community, and the community would help look after them. This, I don't believe it worked very well, because once someone's been institutionalized, it's extremely hard to be integrated back into society. Like, if you've been in an institution for 20 years and people have changed from the imperial system to the metric system, you wouldn't have known. You wouldn't know about currency, you would probably not be able to look after yourself very well, and this has actually contributed to homelessness in the UK, especially because these people, the community doesn't really care for them that much, so they end up on the streets.
Unfortunately, this is the same problem for prisoners, you know, when they come out of prison.
If you have it on your condotta that you've been in jail, people are not going to look very favorably upon you.
Yeah.
So do you think that crime is one of may lead to poverty? Because of course, ex-prisoners they find it difficult to reintegrate in society.
It works both ways. It's a vicious
crime
circle.
And poverty and crime.
Exactly.
And of course, governmental institutions should of course be doing much more to reintegrate ex-convicts into society, with the help of civil society, of course, and church institutions as well.
Yeah. you know, changing the mentality of trying at least to change the mentality through education, of course.
Yes.
Again, there we go, education
is extremely important.
Again, we would fall back to education.
Yeah. Even for the excluded or marginalized people, like prisoners receiving education while they're in prison.
Oh,
that will help them considerably to reintegrate into society.
This is all we have time for, so I thank you very much for your interesting discussion today, and I hope that we tackled all aspects of poverty which are important and relative to the subject. Mikhail Pisani and Elizabeth Malia, thank you very much for joining us today. Unfortunately, this is the last show of It's Debatable, so I would like to take this opportunity to thank everybody, especially the Campus FM management, particularly Carmenu Grek and Kenneth Mitzi, our technicians, Selene Bohaja, the head of programs, and Ms. Joyce Grek. I would like to thank the International Relations Department, particularly Dr. Kaleya Ragonesi for her assistance and support, and also the Malta International Relations Student Association. I would like to thank also my co-hosts, Luca Lacetignola and Hilary Briffa for their efforts and contributions, and all our academic guests and students who participated in these 17 shows. I thank you very much for listening to It's Debatable, and we hope to be back again next season. I, Darren Katkuti, thank you very much for listening to Campus FM.
It's Debatable.